than most.
How about him?
That is better than most.
From the parking lot, and Vermont has a 59-55 lead.
Touchdown, Heisman! There are no flags on the field! It's a miracle! Tennessee has pulled a miracle!
The Mixed Picks Sports Show.
You can be part of the Mixed Picks Sports Show by emailing us, RAD at radradio.com, like Ian did. You can call us at 888-989-9811. Steve Mickelson joins us from Las Vegas and MixPicks.com. That's 2Ks in Mix, 2Ks in Picks, MixPicks.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
A couple things I got to work in for topicality reasons, because this is happening this afternoon, and it actually goes back to, we were talking about how the Coyotes are moving to Utah. No more Arizona Coyotes. They couldn't make anything work in Phoenix or anywhere else, so they're moving to Utah next year. And but they're losing the name. They're not going to be the Coyotes. And Ian used that reference to ask you, Steve, a very specific question about Ian's favorite football team and yours. Says, Steve, you said that you don't care what the Coyotes call themselves in Utah as long as they have good colors in their uniforms. Well, today, the Detroit Lions will unveil their new uniforms. I think we can both agree they suck as of now. I'll get your thoughts on that in a moment. Says, my question seems to be split amongst the Lions community. Do we add black as part of our war paint? Now, the Lions are part of about a half dozen NFL teams that are getting new uniforms. We've had some reveals already. There's a few more scheduled. They released, the Lions did yesterday, a 13-second teaser video online with a few things that people are commenting on. When it comes to the helmet, it looks like there are flecks of silver that are in the headgear. A blue and white jersey are hinted at with a close-up of the NFL badge on the neck stitching. Blue pants are returning, it looks like, and old fans may prefer the silver pants that they've worn for years. We don't know, though. This is all a teaser video. CEO Rod Wood said that they won't be changing the overall Honolulu blue and silver scheme. He said, quote, they're not purple, they're not yellow, they're not gold. We're honoring our traditional colors with a little updating and a twist. The WCF patch for William Clay Ford, the founder that's been there for a decade, looks like that's moving to the back of the helmet. But we won't know any of this until this afternoon at 4 p.m. local time, at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So I guess two things for you, Steve. One, you are a big uniform guy, I've noticed. Two, do you agree with Ian that the current Lions uniforms suck? And what do you think of he says no black. There's no indication that black's going to be added, but we don't know. And do you have like does this matter in the long run to you?
Yes, it does. As a kid growing up, I thought Lions uniforms was one of the better uniforms in the league. I'm not going to say the best uniforms, but one of the better uniforms. And you know this because I have texted you this numerous times. I currently think the Lions uniforms are arguably the worst uniforms in the NFL. I think they are awful. I know they tried to pay homage to their history and roll it back, but no NFL team should roll back and try to copy their 1940s uniform. And this is what the Lions did with the uniform they're currently having. The Honolulu blue, the silver have to be the primary colors. And I mean primary as in pretty visible on all uniforms, but I would like to see them bring back a touch of white. And I actually liked the touch of black as in like outlining the numbers. So if you're wearing a blue jersey, you have the silver number, you have the white around that, and then the black around that, something to that extent to make it stick out. The numbers they've worn on these uniforms the last several years, you can't even see them. And even the worst part, and not that it matters that much, but the color combination and how they had it, you would see the sweat go through on the Lions uniforms way more than any other team. So it looked like somebody took a bucket of water and, you know, drenched them in the front and the back. It just stood out and really changed that uniform. So I'm very happy to hear they're changing it. I'm not looking for a black jersey, and I'll be really disappointed if they go to a black jersey, but I like the little bit of the black outline on the helmet that they had. And I think it was during Mariucci's days when he was there, when Mooch was their head coach. And I like that in their striping and around their numbers. I'm hoping they have it. I'm willing to do away with the black if they bring back the white, but I really think they need the touch of the white and black to go with the silver.
What about
and the Honolulu blue?
What about the possibility? And again, it's just a teaser. It's kind of like you see a preview for a movie that looks great, and then you see the movie and it sucks. But so we don't know what we got. What about the teasing idea that of going to blue pants?
They had blue pants in the past. I'm not a fan of any team that wears blue pants with a blue jersey. If you're going to wear the blue pants, though, no. I don't think it looks bad if you're going to wear the white jersey. I wouldn't want to see that, you know, as a home uniform, but a white jersey with the blue pants doesn't bother me at all.
So we'll get reaction from Steve tomorrow. Maybe not to start the show, because tomorrow morning we're going to actually have guests from another sports show, a podcast that Steve was actually part of a few weeks ago, and now they're going to return the favor. They'll be on for the first half hour with us, the first segment tomorrow, Anthony and Bob from a podcast called Crossed Up. Now, if you Google it, you can find it everywhere. You can find it on Apple Podcasts and everything. You'll see that it's called Crossed Up, a Phillies podcast, but they are Philly guys. They know all sports, and we're going to be talking to them about a variety of things, including, which we're about to get to, what the hell the Flyers were thinking the other night to knock out, quote-unquote, be part of knocking Steve's Detroit Red Wings out of a chance of getting into the NHL playoffs. But, Steve, tell me about these guys, because you went on their show as a guest as well, and now they're going to come on and be a guest of ours. But how, what was it like? How are they? What should we expect tomorrow?
Oh, it was a great show. It was a lot like ours, just a couple of guys sitting around talking sports. This is, you know, what they do. They also obviously are Philadelphia heavy. My understanding, and I've known Anthony for a while now, he is the beat writer for the Phillies and the Flyers. So he follows the Phillies and the Flyers around the country and covers their games. And he does podcasts for the Phillies and I believe for the Flyers as well. So he's been in the industry for a long time. Bob is more of a marketing guy, very sports knowledgeable as well. Very easygoing, and it was great being on their show.
So we're going to talk to them tomorrow. Again, if you want to get some preview of them, Google the podcast called Crossed Up. And if you have any questions for them, email us, rad@radradio.com. We'll be happy to ask them. And you'll notice that today is a week before the NFL draft. So we'll talk to them about the Flyers, which we're about to talk about with some emails and some stories and their choice. But we'll ask them both about what they think of the Eagles heading in. And obviously the big thing they do is the Phillies and how close they got last season and how what they think of the Phillies moving forward, et cetera, as well. And we'll see if we have time to throw in the Sixers as well. I mean, you know, a Philly and all at I don't know how much time we'll be able to get with them, but I'm very familiar with Pennsylvania in general. My entire father's family is from a little town outside of Philadelphia called Norristown, and some of the stereotypes that go along with what Philadelphia is, and especially if you've never been there and things like that. So we're looking forward to that, and we're also looking forward to a week from tomorrow. Now, a week from today, Steve and I will do our final official. All right, here's what we think for the NFL draft. We're not going to do like a whole board or anything like that. In fact, I've got in my mind an idea of how it'll work, and Steve and I will be emailing back and forth. But we'll talk about it all next week on at least one segment every day. But Thursday will be the day where it's like, okay, you know, maybe like 1 through 10 or something like that. But on Friday of next week, we won't be on until noon, and we'll be on from noon to 3 next Friday. So a 3-hour mixed pick sports show. Everywhere you get it, all the time, Rad TV, the membership site, 104.7 FM, 890 AM in Sacramento, where we will evaluate and go over draft one or day one of the draft, the NFL draft, which you know there's going to be some shockers. There always are. And we can get to do winners and losers and talk about heading into day two. So some fun changes and exciting things coming up on the Mixed Pick Sports Show. And as I mentioned, that gets us back to Philadelphia and the Flyers, because we talked about why did the Flyers pull their goalie with more than 3 minutes to go, which in seconds led to Washington getting scoring a goal and clinching the final spot in the NHL playoffs. So Jeff wrote in and said, I love having the show daily. Your approach to it is amazing. Hockey's my game. I like that you guys are giving it attention. on the subject of pulling the goalie very early in a tie game, in the Capitals-Flyers game in particular. The trend lately has been pulling goalies when you are trailing much earlier than in the past. It's not uncommon to see a goalie pulled when trailing 2 to 3 minutes to go. I think it's analytics-driven. So that's kind of a general observation from a P1 or a hyper-active hockey fan. But Jeff wrote in also and said, you were wondering why the Flyers pulled their goalie. Here's why. They were one of the four teams left for the last playoff spot. But they had to win in regulation due to tie-breaking procedures. Had the game gone into overtime, no matter the result, the Flyers would have been eliminated from playoff contention. That's why they did what they did by pulling their goalie at the end, and their coach even said this before the game. And when you read through it, and I mean, he is right, head coach John Tortorella stands by the decision, although he admits because both that game and the Red Wings game were going on, he didn't know in the moment that he pulled the goalie that the Red Wings had just scored with 3.3 seconds left and they were heading to overtime. In the end, none of it would have mattered. But the thinking was the selfish way of, this is our only chance as the Flyers to have a shot at getting in. Once there was no longer a chance for that to happen, had they not pulled their goalie, they could have played spoiler to Washington. He didn't know any of that in the real time. But it explains the thinking, at least, that was going on that made a lot of us scratch our head. I know it doesn't make you feel any better about your Red Wings, Steve, but...
Yes, and you know, I get caught up in the moment, too. Also, I think it shows, look, we're not experts at this. In the NHL, when you're down by two goals, you are usually going to pull your goalie at the three-minute mark, which is what he did, because he viewed it as they had to win in regulation, so he needed... to do everything possible to get that goal. And in hindsight and actually reading his explanation, it made 100% sense of what he did. It's just, as a fan, I'm watching and I'm right. Emotional. I'm like, you just ripped my Red Wings off here. You pulled your goalie at 3 minutes and 12 seconds. What are you doing? But, you know, when you calm down and you see it and then you see what he says, it made total sense of what he did. I agreed with what he did, and you know, where yesterday at this time I was a little bit still upset about it, but you know, to me it also shows, look, we're fans too.
Now we have games that matter tonight in the NHL that we're going to get to, but I gotta snap back to where we started. I want to thank Brad for writing in, rad@radradio.com, and our crack behind the scenes crew, because this is the problem with living in 2024. Nothing stays secret. And, of course, I don't know if that we can say that we have full 100% confidence in this, but the new jerseys for the Lions have been leaked. They're out there. And we're putting them up. If you're watching us on Rad TV at members.radradio.com, and it looks like the ones that have been leaked, there's three different versions of the top jersey. You got a white on if you're watching on Rad TV, which you can always go back later at members.radrio.com and watch this if you're listening in your car or whatever. You got an all white jersey with blue lettering and some of the gray or silver as bordering there. You've got an all blue jersey with white lettering for the name on the back and the number, but you still have the silver or gray, whatever you want to call that. There is a black. There's a black option. That's the third one with the blue in the lettering. Initial thoughts, Steve, on, okay, so there is black. Initial thought on just what you're seeing there that's been leaked.
Much, much better improvement from what they wore in the past. I like the white jersey. I like the blue jersey. There is no black trim in it, but I'm good with that because they brought and have that white as a part of it. I'm not a big fan of the black jersey at all.
Yeah.
It just to me is like, oh, black sells type of thing, and we're gonna try to get one. So I'm not a fan of the black jersey, but I don't mind. I think the white and the blue are improvements. I think if you added just a little bit of, you know, like maybe white or black into that striping, it would help. I'm curious to see if they're going to adjust the helmet at all either, or if they're going to leave the helmet as is, because I wasn't a big fan of the helmet either.
Which, again, the leaked video that the official Lions, I think it was their Twitter X account, teaser, 13-second teaser, it did indicate a change to the helmets. So we'll see. You'll get the full look later today And we'll talk more about it tomorrow. The other teams, again, it's like a half dozen of them, are not teams of necessarily noteworthy importance to the regional area. Like the Niners aren't making any major changes. They did that black uniform thing one season. I hated it. Raiders aren't making any major changes. Jets already did. So there's a few changes out there, et cetera. Because Steve's a lifelong suffering Lions fan, we had to talk about that. Let's go back to the NHL.
Hold on a second. Do you notice how all the bad teams are constantly changing their uniforms? In any effort to sell more merchandise, the good teams always stay traditional to who they are. So if your team's constantly changing your uniforms, you now know why.
Yeah, good point. By the way, do you hate with a passion like I do as much? And I don't know if they're still doing it. I think they did it two seasons at least, when the NFL forced all the teams to at least one game do the monochromatic thing. Like, especially that all neon green Seahawk uniform, awful, just awful.
It is awful. I fall into the traditional. I like the throwbacks because I love it when, you know, the Patriots go back to the Patriot on hiking the ball on the helmet, and the Buccaneers to the, you know, the creamsicle uniforms. I don't want to see them wear them every week, but, you know, once or twice a year, I think it's wonderful to see, but leave the uniforms alone for the most part. Find one that works and just stick with it.
All right, the three games that matter tonight in the NHL, one of them is kind of selfish, because the Eastern Conference is, they're set. But in the West, we're still trying to figure out the exact seeding and who will play when and where as everything gets started with the actual NHL playoffs on Saturday. And we'll go over those matchups tomorrow during the second half of the show. But I'm going to go in reverse order tonight. Got to have ESPN Plus if you want to watch the game. But the Chicago Blackhawks are at the Los Angeles Kings, and this matters in terms of the seeding in the West. So what do you got with Chicago at LA, Steve?
Yeah, the Kings are a 360 favorite, so they're heavily favored here. Wow. The Blackhawks, disappointing season. They got a Bedard, a rookie player, very exciting to watch. He was the top draft pick or one of the top draft picks. He's going to be a great player down the road. The Kings are just hoping to win here and hoping the Vegas Golden Knights lose. I would be surprised if the Blackhawks find a way to win here. They're in LA. Players are probably packed for Hawaii or something just to, you know, I'm not even going home. I'm in LA. Let's just go to Hawaii before I head back to Chicago. It's still cold there.
Which brings us to the other game that matters, because the only thing we're looking for here is the seeding between LA and your Las Vegas Golden Knights. And you got Anaheim is at Vegas. So what do you see there?
Vegas is a $4 favorite here. Aiden Hill will be in goal tonight. He'll be in the net. I would be heartbroken if Vegas found a way to lose this game. They've played their way into that three seed, which to me then sets it up to advance into the Stars in the Western Conference final. I love their seed right here. They can win this opening round against the Oilers if that's where it is as of right now. So Vegas just has to take care of business, get it done. And the Ducks are not a very good team.
So if both the Kings and Vegas win, which is it? In that case, do the Knights wind up playing the Oilers?
As of right now, the Knights will be the sixth seed and play the Oilers. The Kings will be the eighth seed and play the Stars.
The other game, this came up a couple weeks ago. Somebody wrote in and said, my team's the San Jose Sharks. They're awful. They were at 18 wins at the time, and they said, what's Steve's over-under on 20 wins for the whole season? Steve wouldn't even give him a game and said, they're going to end with 18. Then they win their 19th game, and it all comes down to tonight. This is it. It's your last opportunity, San Jose, to go from 19 to 20 wins. Can they do it tonight, Steve? They are at Calgary.
Calgary's a 260 favorite here. They are at home. They're a 500 team at home. And they're still playing good hockey. They're still trying. They haven't given up on the season. Their last game, you know, they were still playing hard all the way through the game. The Sharks, I mean, they have 8 wins on the road to get to 20. Obviously, they got to win the ninth. They're 8-28-1 on the road. This is a bad team. They're moving in the right direction. They're rebuilding. Losing, they are going to have the best odds to get the number one seed in the lottery, but they're just a bad team, and you have to believe they're not even going to show up.
So you believe the Sharks will end with 19 wins?
Yes, I do. All right. I thought they'd end at 18, yeah, that's true. So I'm already proven wrong.
Let me squeeze in just a couple quick nuggets from the NFL, rumor-driven or just people are talking about it. Go back to San Francisco, the 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, who is growing more and more tired of his current contract situation. Niners GM John Lynch keeps saying that they're working, they're actively talking with Ayuk, but more and more reporting says that with a week from the draft, it's a week from today, that there is a lack of progress that could lead to the 49ers deciding to trade Ayuk, because if you're going to do it around the draft and get what you can get, which brings us back to the Pittsburgh Steelers. We've talked about this already before. They are actively pursuing acquiring Ayuk. They're not making it a secret within all the sources of the NFL. They are determined to pair him with George Pickens. They would love a talented veteran wideout pairing there. And Steelers coach Mike Tomlin has a relationship longstanding with John Lynch, the general manager of the Niners, from their days together in Tampa Bay. Here's the scenario that's being thrown around in the last 24 hours from Niners sources. A scenario between the two sides sends Ayuk to Pittsburgh and the 49ers' first two draft picks. But in return, the Niners receive the Steelers' first three draft picks, which the reason that's what's being floated, we don't know any legitimacy of any of this, is that it's a win for both sides in the sense that the Steelers get Ayuk. And I don't know how they're going to work out. You know, they got to sign Ayuk as well. You know, hey, we're going to get you a deal moving forward, et cetera. But they would still have one pick, the Steelers would, in each of the first three rounds. But the Niners would move up in the first two rounds and get an additional third-round pick. Of course, they lost a bunch of their picks in the Trey Lance deal. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, you have to believe where there's smoke, there's fire. The Niners have until the draft to get a deal done. If I'm the 49ers, I've already floated. Look, this is my best and final offer. Are you willing to take it? If not, then look, we're going to be moving you come the draft because we need the picks. I don't have the draft order in front of me. So moving up from the 49ers at what, 31 to the Steelers at whatever, yes, is a little bit. But when you look at the whole package, yes, you're moving up in the first and second round. You're picking up an additional third. You know, and this is where I would go and inquire with you, Rob. Are you satisfied? Because in a sense, you're getting a third round pick is it and the ability to move up. But if you're going from 31 to 24, is that a huge move? And are you going to be able to get the wide receiver you want to replace him?
I don't like any of it, to be completely candid with you. I think Ayuk's an incredibly underrated player. Remember, he led the team in all of the offensive stats, other than obviously rushing, which McCaffrey had. And the idea of figuring out a way to keep Ayuk and let Deebo Samuels leave after another season and move on, especially because, to your point, I double-checked while you were talking, the Niners would move up from what are their 31, right? Yeah, because they lost the Super Bowl. They'd move up to 20. I mean, I know there's a lot of wide receivers in the draft, but really? Move up to 20?
You're going into it thinking, look, for Ayuk, we can get two number ones. And then you find out you get a third and you're able to move up from the 31st to the 20th pick. It just seems that you're not getting anything close to the value of an Ayuk in a trade package. Yes, yay, we got a third-round pick. I just don't see the excitement for the 49ers side unless they already know they're not going to be able to re-sign him.
Right.
If you're not going to be able to re-sign him, getting the three picks, moving up in the first to the second, it's going to get you a better player. Again, the Niners need to start building on that depth because of where they are losing some players. I can see that. Accepting that trade is they already know they're not re-signing him, and that's the best offer they can find.
Well, yeah, and that's the key there, though, too, is that if they've come to that decision knowing the history of Lynch as a GM, you would hope and assume he is calling other teams. This Steelers thing's been floating for weeks, so it's sexy, it's easy, it's almost lazy. But because at that point, you start saying to other teams, yeah, we are interested, but you can do better than this, right? And then we go from there. So we're going to talk, like I said, draft all next week. We'll take a break. We got NBA results from yesterday that we got to talk about and more coming up.
Knicks, picks, The Mixed Picks Sports Show. Let's
go! We got this email from Adam on the heels of yesterday telling the story that Gary, who occasionally joins us on the Mixed Picks Sports Show, kind of got a last-minute idea the other night to take his dad to the Warriors-Kings play-in a game. Got second row seats, which his dad didn't know until they got there. And what Gary didn't know is that his dad, who is 81, is a lifelong basketball fan. That he knew, obviously. And these are his dad's two favorite teams. Grew up in the Bay Area, moved to Sacramento, adopted the Kings as his other team. But his dad had never been to a live NBA game. So we told the story, showed some pictures, showed how close they were. And Adam wrote in and said, "My dad died in 2013. I just turned 50. And I've missed a lot of adult son-father activities. When you, Rob, tell of your relationship with your dad currently, and I hear your dad on the other show, the Rad Radio show that we do in the mornings, and when you were talking about Gary taking his dad to a Kings game, it really lifts my heart up. My dad was my first introduction to sports, taught me how to golf, which I still do today, and I'm a 6 handicap. Oh, aren't you just great with your 6 handicap? And never missed one of my football games all the way through college. Every time I pick up my golf clubs, I think of him, and every time I hear a great father-son story like Gary taking Pops to the Kings game, it lifts my heart up." And in fact, you know, same thing on my end, Steve. I know we talked about this at length yesterday, and we share this. And he mentions the parents going to the games thing. Both of my parents, and I played all the way through high school. I played baseball. There's only one game that my dad ever missed, and it was because at the time he had joined the traveling team where he worked, meaning, you know, he had to travel around the country. There was no way to get out of this one trip that he had to take. I still remember it was to Cleveland. And the first thing, he when I walked in the door after the game, because this is way before cell phones, right? This is mid-80s. This is Little League. I think it was like 13 or 14. And I'd had the game of my life. I hit in the winning run. I had pitched this great game. But the only way at that time to get a hold of you is you just call and we didn't even have answering machines. You just call and you hope somebody answers. We walked in the door and it wasn't like 3 seconds. He's been calling for one reason. He wanted to know how the game went. And those are the things. And that's what made that story yesterday with Gary and his dad just so special to both of us.
Yes. And those are the experiences, as I'm sure this leads to why you're such a big sports fan and why you enjoy going to the games and all of that, because it brings up these memories with your family, your friends, and participating in the sports as well.
As we mentioned, tomorrow we're going to talk with the Crossed Up guys. That's a podcast out of Philadelphia. Steve was a guest a few weeks ago. They focus primarily on the Phillies and the Flyers. But look, they live in Philly. They're Philly guys. They know sports. So, of course, we'll have to try to sneak in a little question about the 76ers. Joel Embiid and the Sixers, they've had their share, right, of disappointments in the postseason. This year, the big thing was hang on until Embiid can come back. And he did. He is back. And what a game last night between the Sixers and the Heat. It ended at 105-104 in favor of the Sixers for a while there, like with 9 seconds left. You knew the Sixers had it wrapped up. But prior to that, it kept going. I mean, it was like 90-88, 90-90, 92-90, 92-92. I mean, it was nuts there at the end. And Embiid struggled, actually, most of the game. Scored 11 of his 23 points in the fourth quarter to help the Sixers overcome, yet again in the NBA, a double-digit halftime deficit. Sixers win. Philly gets a Knicks series this weekend that we'll spend a lot more time on tomorrow. Anything jump out at you about that game, Steve?
I was so disappointed in the first half. The Sixers just looked so bad. And as you know, I've been very high on the Sixers. They had 12 turnovers. They missed so many shots. I mean, there was the one possession, Tobias Harris. He missed 3 or 4 like 1-foot layups. He put it up, missed it, got the rebound, and just kept playing volleyball with it, continued to miss it. And Embiid looked tired from the get-go. That was the part that worried me a bit, is he looked tired from opening tip-off through. But Batum stepped up, had a big second half, hit some key shots. And Embiid, when needed, late in the game, hit a 3, hit another bucket when they really needed him, as you said, at 11 in the fourth, stepped up. And that was the Sixers. Even when Embiid wasn't at his best, they found a way to win. which is why I like the Sixers in this next series against the Knicks as well.
Meanwhile, the Miami Heat, the losers, they will host Chicago tomorrow night. The winner gets the eighth seed, meaning whoever wins tomorrow night has to play the team with the best record in the NBA, the Celtics. And the thing with the Heat, and I've been kind of high on the Heat, if they can get into the actual playoffs, they took a major blow. First of all, last night it was, oh, God, Jimmy Butler, he's hurt. We don't know. And then this morning it was confirmed that Jimmy Butler is expected to be sidelined for several weeks, quote, quote, with a right MCL injury suffered in Wednesday's loss last night. I don't know that that does or doesn't affect the Heat's ability to beat the Bulls, but that kind of says the Heat ain't going anywhere in the playoffs.
The Heat aren't going anywhere without Jimmy Butler. You could see that knee was affecting him throughout. You know, once he injured it, you'd see him grimacing in pain at various times throughout the game. It's a shame because this Heat's team is fun to watch, and Jimmy Butler has been fantastic over the years in the playoffs, but they're done. They're down to a 1.5-point favorite over the Bulls in this game. Even if they win it, they have zero shot at beating the Celtics.
As do the Bulls, correct?
Correct.
I mean, come on. I mean, there's one thing for, there's a reason we play the games, and then there's those that where you go, come on, give me a break, and that's one of them. All right, we got this email from Ron. This is one that again, if you're a tertiary or you're not a hardcore, look, I'm not a hardcore NBA fan. There's still a lot of things about the NBA I can't explain to you. And this is not an uncommon question. And so Ron said, Rob or Steve, and I will tell you right now, this lands on Steve to answer. Can you please explain to me why the Pelicans are playing the Kings tomorrow instead of the Lakers? I know life is not fair, but I don't understand why the Pelicans lost and now playing the Kings, and if the Kings lost, they're eliminated, and the Pelicans move on. It should be the Lakers and the Kings play, and whoever wins those games, they should move on into the playoffs. You and I kind of went over this with the 7 and 8 seeds and the 9 and 10 seeds, et cetera. But can you just re-explain it to Ron why the Kings are playing the Pelicans instead of the Lakers?
Because the regular season matters, and that's where the seeding is very important. The 7-8 seeds, because of the regular season, the winner gets in, but the loser continues and gets another consolation game. The 9 and 10, again, keep in mind the regular season matters. You had a terrible regular season, but you were still able to get into this playoff tournament. It would not be fair for a 9 to beat a 10 and automatically get into the playoffs, where an 8 seed loses to a 7 and they would be eliminated. That's why you're going to see the loser of the 7-8, which is the Pelicans, get a home game against the winner of the 9-10. Again, the regular season matters, and it's not fair that a 9 seed, because they beat a 10, gets into the playoffs, where 8 loses to a 7 and then would be eliminated.
And obviously tomorrow we will preview both of those final play-in games, and we will also tomorrow go over the an overall look at the series is as we know them in both the NHL and the NBA as we look forward. I mentioned that I had a couple of quick nuggets I wanted to throw out, and I went to the Brandon Ayuk story from the NFL. I want to jump back to the NFL because the other big one that was talked about was ESPN's report yesterday. The short version is that the reason, or a major reason, that Bill Belichick is not a coach is actually New England owner Robert Kraft. The ESPN report asserts that Kraft talked multiple owners out of hiring Bill Belichick, including Robert Blank, who was the closest one of the Atlanta Falcons. Multiple sources, according to ESPN, spoke about Kraft's relationship with Belichick, and that Kraft told Arthur Blank, did I say Robert earlier? It's Arthur Blank, that, quote, you'll never have a warm conversation with Belichick. And that was a major issue for Blank, who likes to create a family atmosphere. Ultimately, obviously, the Falcons hired Raheem Morris. There was other issues with Belichick in Atlanta, like his history of serving as de facto GM, although Belichick told ESPN that he made it clear he would coexist with Falcons executives. There's also in the ESPN report a story that Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie did inquire about, is it time for Sirianni to go, and reconsidered entirely after one conversation with Robert Kraft. It's out there. It's being yapped about. I haven't seen if Kraft made a comment yet or if Belichick had, other than being interviewed by ESPN. But that's a juicy little story there.
A couple of points to that story for me. One, if Robert Kraft really did any of this, my respect for Robert Kraft drops drastically.
Yeah.
Talk about not having any appreciation. Prior to Belichick, the Patriots, like the Lions, had been a laughing stock throughout the NFL. Yes, they'd been to a couple of Super Bowls. Yes, they've been blown out. I mean, not even in it. Never seriously a contending team. And he made them a perennial winner. Look at all the Super Bowls. Look at all the division wins, playoff appearances. And if he had that little respect for Bill Belichick and appreciation for what he accomplished, Robert Kraft, in my book, sell the team because I don't even want you as an owner.
In a quick search, the only response that I see came from the team as a statement which simply denies that Robert Kraft warned the Falcons not to trust Bill Belichick. And it's a very short statement, as if to say, well, that's not the exact quote. I mean, there's a whole lot of ways to read around it. And the fact that Kraft hasn't come out and actually, like, made a statement or even held a press conference yet makes you wonder about it. And I agree entirely. And I want to hear more from Belichick on this too, which he will be doing part of the NFL draft next week, as well as he does segue into his TV career and his broadcasting career that'll probably only last a year. But we'll see what the fallout is of this whole Robert Kraft story. I wanted to sneak that in because everybody's talking about it. We'll come back after this.
Mix Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
Let's go!
Here's a fun one that just came in a few minutes ago from Matt, obviously watching us on Rad TV at members.radradio.com, which you can do anytime, even after the fact. You can find it later and watch us. So Steve Mickelson, my cohort in this criminal operation, is a Detroit fan through and through with most things. There's this weird offshoot of being a Boston Red Sox fan that we've explained before. We'll get to again. But he also lives in Las Vegas and has adopted, the Detroit Red Wings are your hockey team, but the Vegas Golden Knights are, I think, you know, they're like A1, right? They're like second. And you've adopted the Raiders. You root for the local team. So that led to Matt writing in, as you wear your Golden Knights shirt. He says, I apologize if you already covered this. I just got out of a meeting. But why is the Lions fan wearing a Raiders hat?
Solely because they are in Las Vegas. Yep. I have not adopted the Raiders as a 1B. The Raiders are still pretty far down on my list. But I live in Las Vegas. I find it fascinating as I wear, you know, like a Vegas Raiders shirt or hat, all the comments I get with the go Raiders, etc. It makes traveling a lot more interesting. With the Lions, I'd always get the, your team stinks. You know, I'd always get the negative comments. Yeah. So the Raiders are a lot more fun wearing it out in public in the comments you get.
Let's jump real quickly to baseball. Again, tomorrow morning's show, the first half, the first start of the show, the first segment, we're going to be talking to the Crossed Up guys. They are based out of Philadelphia. They are a Phillies Flyers heavy podcast, sports podcast. Steve was on their show a few weeks ago, but they know Eagles, they know Flyers. We're going to be, or they know Sixers. We're going to be talking about as much as we can work in, but the Phillies in particular as well, of what they think of how close they got last year and what's coming up in the future. And we have been tracking, of course, the regional teams in our area, figuring out if the Oakland A's are going to get over and under. What's your number, Steve? 56.5 wins?
58.5.
I got to write that down. Meanwhile, the Giants, they went out and they spent $62 million on Blake Snell, and he's had two horrible starts. And we got an email from Kyle, R-A-D, at radradio.com, who said, as a diehard Giants fan, Steve is right. This is technically Blake Snell's spring training right now. But, like Steve, I didn't like the signing anyways. Yeah, Blake Snell has the Cy Young hardware he earned, but in my opinion, he's too wild, he walks too many, and he's too inconsistent in the zone itself, regardless of how his starts go. We can only see how it turns out. In the end, is that going to be viewed as a bad signing?
I don't know about that, but great email. We agree on every part of that.
You also mentioned, with the 76ers, we used the analogy, actually, that they were just hanging on until Embiid got healthy, and now they're so healthy they're going to be playing the Knicks, and you indicated, you know, we're going to get more into the series as is tomorrow. You even like the Sixers against the Knicks as they head into the actual playoffs. The Houston Astros, who should be one of the five best teams in Major League Baseball, are off to a rough start. And you indicated earlier in the week, are they just hanging on for Verlander? And the report yesterday was that he was going to throw a side session. And if it went well, he would make his season debut sometime this weekend against the Nationals. And then it was confirmed that Verlander will make his season debut tomorrow night at the Washington Nationals. While they wouldn't say, Houston manager Joe Espada wouldn't say how many pitchers the 41-year-old will be limited to, they'll obviously keep an eye on his workload. Verlander himself admits he is not thrilled with the results of his two rehab starts. He did one for Triple-A and one for Double-A. He got knocked around pretty good in both of them. He allowed 7 hits and 6 runs, 5 earned in 4 innings on Saturday of last weekend, through 77 pitches on April 7th. He allowed 6 earned runs and struck out 6 pitching into the 4th inning. Not impressive. I don't know how much that matters. He's still Justin Verlander until he isn't.
He is Justin Verlander, a first ballot Hall of Famer. But boy, are the Astros desperate. They are rushing him back. Look, we need you now. He even says he's not feeling comfortable. We talked about Blake Snell just a minute ago on how this is really his spring training and trying to gear up and get ready to go. Sounds like Verlander's not even as far as Blake Snell was down this road. So what happens if he goes out and gets torched on Friday night? And, you know, you want to believe he's fully healthy, but what if he's not and they're rushing him back? This would be a devastating blow to this Astros team if Verlander ends up after 2 or 3 starts going down with another injury.
Okay, devastating. Is that the word to be used with the Atlanta Braves placing second baseman Ozzie Albies on the 10-day injured list with a fractured big toe on his right foot, or is this something the Braves can get right through?
This is just something the Braves can get right through. They have depth on this team. They're going to win close to 100 games. Every team's going to have some injuries. Yes, you don't want to lose Albies, but if it's going to happen, I'd rather lose him right now, get him back into playing shape and ready for the rest of the season.
We did get an email from Matt about a topic that we have covered a few times over the last couple of weeks. He asked, could you talk about the Trevor Bauer situation? Why is this guy being blackballed by Major League Baseball when obviously he has been exonerated? And that email came in after it was a day or two ago. Had the story yesterday, just couldn't fit it in, that the woman who accused former Major League pitcher Trevor Bauer of sexual assault charges has now been indicted on felony charges of fraudulent schemes and theft by extortion. She filed a lawsuit against Bauer in 2022, updated it last year, alleging he sexually assaulted her in 2020, and it led to an unplanned pregnancy. Then similar allegations were made by 3 other women. Ultimately, the initial accuser demanded $3.5 million from Bauer. That's where the extortion thing comes in. But according to ESPN, when police started interviewing the women, particularly the initial accuser, the whole thing unraveled, fell apart. Bauer was completely exonerated. And yet, even though he was the 2020 Cy Young Award winner, he has desperately been trying this year to pitch anywhere against anyone and say, I want to come back. And the emailer's right. It seems like Major League Baseball, where, 28 teams could use a guy if these half were near being 2020 Trevor Bauer, but there doesn't yet seem to be willingness.
Which is a little surprising to me, especially with this latest charge of the extortion is against a different individual. This isn't even against Bauer. This is her now being charged with a felony for extorting someone else after Bauer. With everything that you see, look, Trevor Bauer has his off-field issues. I'm not going to deny that. He's a talented pitcher. He's been exonerated. He's shown, you know, he hasn't been charged with anything. And now we see the person that you know, was the main culprit in these charges is now being charged with extortion again of another individual. I hope that Bauer somewhere, somehow a team steps up, gives him an opportunity, but it's going to be a PR nightmare. The team has to be strong enough to be able to get through that. And that's probably my fear right now for Bauer is there's a possibility that no team is willing to take on that headache. And so he doesn't have it. And then if you're Trevor Bauer, I mean, your career's over.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to swallow, especially when you had no control over how it ended. And you've been exonerated for everything and your career's still over.
Another note from Major League Baseball. I have a, it's actually not even a bet because he agrees with me. He being Gary again, who joins us occasionally on the Mixed Picks sports cast about the Oakland A's and their attendance as they play out this year in the sewer that is the Oakland Coliseum before they move to Sacramento. On Saturday night of last weekend against the Washington Nationals, they had an attendance of 3,330 people, obviously the lowest attended game of 2024 at the time, until two nights ago against the St. Louis Cardinals when they had 3,296. On a day game yesterday against the Cardinals, they got 9,000 to show up. Not sure what the connection is. The A's used to do businessman specials, you know, day games, people working from home, more desire to leave, whatever. But this, the A's are they hit the road until the 29th now, when they'll come back home against the Pirates, the Marlins, and the Rangers. Now the Marlins are weekend games, but so was that Nationals game when they had 33-30. That might set a new low record, and my quote unquote bet, but again, I haven't gotten any takers, is that by the All-Star break, the A's will have a game where they have fewer than 2,000 fans in that stadium.
I almost want to go a little bit farther that by the time the season is winding down, I'm not convinced if the A's would have a game that they might have less than 1,000 fans.
Oh my God.
And you look and roll this into September. Football has started. It's a weekday. They're playing, you know what, the Chicago White Sox.
There you go.
And are you really even going to go spend $20 to go to the game? You know they're leaving at the end of the year. I would believe and side with you on the less than 2,000, but I'm even willing and considering going even lower.
That's embarrassingly sad. By the way, a couple of final notes again about tomorrow. The Kings game is tomorrow. We'll go over it, and we will talk about how there's this very convoluted formula that if the Kings lose, there's still a ray of hope or ray of sunshine in there in terms of the draft, which we'll talk about before we preview the game tomorrow night. And the big thing is we'll start the show with the guys from Crossed Up, a podcast, a sports podcast out of Philadelphia. Anthony and Bob will join us. Steve was with them on their podcast a couple weeks ago. We'll open the show talking to them about everything from the Flyers. We now know why they made the decision they did. The 76ers' chances, do they agree with Steve that they like the Sixers over the Knights? We'll be 6 days away from the NFL draft. And talk about the Eagles, and their big thing is the Phillies, and we'll talk about how close they got last year and what they think of the Phillies moving forward this year. Email in any questions you got for them, rad@radradio.com. That's in 23 hours from now. Steve, I will talk and see you then.
Thank you.
Mix. All the band is out on the field! He's going to go into the end zone! He's going to go into the field! Mix. Have won!
Gets it out deep.
Picks Sports Show.